to episode 29 of Black Girl Squee, where we celebrate Black Girl Magic with a squee. I'm Dee Dee. The low pitch sound on the squee. I go by Dust Daughter on Twitter.
And I'm into the high-pitched sound on the squee, and I go by Inda's Corner on Twitter.
High-pitched and loud. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What? Ain't nothing wrong with it. And you can contact us at BlackGirlSquee on Twitter, or individually, Inda at Inda's Corner, and me at Dust Daughter. On Tumblr, we're blackgirlsquee.tumblr.com. Our email is blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. Don't be afraid to hit it up. We don't bite, usually.
Mm-hmm, only by request.
That's at Inda's Corner. It's I-N-D-S-C-O-R-N-E-R. We're also on iTunes. If you'd like to rate and review, that would really help the show. And we've moved podcast hosts from Podomatic to Simplecast. So please update your feeds. Now to our spoiler policy, which is that we spoil shit. Mm-hmm. We're going to spoil shit about How to Get Away with Murder? Lord. we'll probably spoil shit about The Walking Dead. And who knows what else. So this is your spoiler warning. If we mention a show, we might just probably spoil it. So you've been warned. Also, another warning. We ain't shit, as you've already seen.
Yep.
We ain't shit. We cuss a lot. We talk about penis.
Yeah.
A lot. So there's your second warning. So now, hopefully you're also, we get really loud on the squeeze. So, you know, if you want to turn your volume down for that, you know, go ahead. Okay. So now, we shall get to our squee-worthy news. And, you know, post-Trumpocalypse, we still have stuff to squee about. Thank God. And it's mostly due to black women. Which really helps for the show branding. first off, just a reminder, this shit ain't on us.
Yep.
94% of black women who voted, voted for the person who won the popular vote, and not for this, Cheeto head looking fascist motherfucker.
Sentient Cheeto.
Mm-hmm. So, don't even try to put it on us. Don't try to put on black women, over 80% of black men voted for Clinton as well, so you can't really put it on them. This is totally white failure. White male and white female failure. So don't come for us until we call for you. And spoiler alert, we won't call for you. And we're not trying to clean up the mess that y'all made. So, yeah. All these people imploring us to fight and, you know, stay ready and all this stuff. I just feel like kicking off my shoes and saying no.
Yeah.
No. I did my job. Now, this is on y'all. Y'all clean it up. I ain't your maid no more, but we're going to get into that later.
Yeah. And don't come up to me. And don't come up to me with a safety pin either. Give me money.
Okay. This we gonna have to turn this into Black Girl Rants, because bitch. This motherfucking safety pin shit.
The fucking safety pins.
Fuck allies. Okay, I'm sorry. We off tangent. That's another warning.
Yeah.
We go off tangent sometimes. All right. So, the Black women. Squee!
Because we always get the job done, even when someone else does. Okay. Our next bit of squee-worthy news. A friend of the show, Savannah J. Frierson, has released a new novel. It's called Manatree. And from the description, I believe it is about a fatal car accident that changes the lives of both parties involved. And from that, we do get a romantic story. And I'll try not to give too much more of that because I try not to give spoilers. But if you are interested in a Black women romance, you can find this at a bunch of digital stores, including Kindle, Apple, Nook, even All Romance eBooks, and lots more of it. If you can just go to her website, and you can find out where to find the book, and you can read an excerpt before you buy.
And her website is sjfbooks.com. That's sjfbooks.com. So check her out. And if you want to support her, she also has a Patreon, which you'll be able to find on the site too. So to friend of the show and favorite writer, one of my favorite writers, Savannah J. Frierson, we give a huge squee! So the New York Times profiled Julie Dash recently to celebrate the re-release of her 25-year-old film, Daughters of the Dust. I can't believe it's that old.
I know.
I'm so old. Anyway, and the title of the New York Times article is called Julie Dash Made a Movie, Then Hollywood Shut Her Out. So it talks about how the release of Beyoncé's visual album Lemonade, which was informed by much of Julie Dash's imagery in Daughters of the Dust, helped renew interest in her film. The Daughters of the Dust was the first feature film by an African-American woman to have a wide release, an achievement sullied only by the icy reception that Hollywood gave Miss Dash back then and pretty much ever since, which is sad. She's 66 now. She says, I pitched to every existing studio out there and every mini major from A to Z. Wow. And it's just sad that someone can make something so beautiful and then get frozen out and not be able to continue to work.
She couldn't even get an agent. That makes no sense.
But people want to complain that we can't find women directors because you freeze them the fuck out.
Thank you. Like they said, she was drawing capacity crowds at, you know, these screenings and, you know, running at film festivals and stuff. But they're like, oh, it's a fluke. you don't have a future. This isn't going to happen all the time. I'm like, seriously?
Oh my God. Anyway, and it's obviously made an impression on several on so many people. I mean, it made an impression on me. That's my home. Username is based on that. I've been using this for years. It made an impression on Beyonce and her crew because she used the same kind of language, visual language, in Lemonade. We're glad that it's being re-released and that more people will have access to this work. And we hope that she will get more work if she wants it, if she wants to continue working in the future. There's no reason why we can't have Julie Dash and Ava DuVernay and Cassie Lemons and all the other, and Dee Reese and all the other not so well known black women directors, Cheryl Dunn. We can, there's no reason why we can't get all of their brilliant work. Especially now that diversity and inclusion pays so well, at the box office, in the ratings. Anyway, so, to Julie Dash, we give the biggest
Okay, well, in some brief music news, Denisha Odige has reteamed with her partner Scene, and they just released their new album, Love and Noir. She says Love and Noir is out today, so it's on the 18th. Ooh, what a night last night. Thank you. Thank you to everyone that was there. Mad love, because they had a listening party in Brooklyn on the night before that. And so I love Denisha Odige. If you've ever listened to her, she has this really buttery, smooth voice. And she and Scene actually worked very well together. If you listened to our show last time, that was them on the opening and closing song, How to Satisfy Your Lover. So definitely check them out. Show them some love. Show them some support. And get their album, because it's, I already know it's great. I only heard like three songs off of it so far, but I already know it's great.
Okay. I was just about to ask you, because I haven't heard it yet, but I will. I will get my hands on it.
Yeah.
So to Denisha and Scene or Sene, we give a huge squeeze! Oh, man. I love this. I love when you do new shit, so I get to interview on the show. my homegirl Enda, co-host Enda Lauren, is always creating. And she created a new Teespring campaign in light of the Trumpocalypse. The aptly titled, Mammy Don't Live Here No More. I'm so here for this. I'm getting me a t-shirt. Or should I get the, I really need the sweatshirt. But, yes. Can you explain, what, inspired the campaign, Miss Lauren?
Well, I have to give a shout out to, my girl, Inasa Crockett. I hope I said her name correctly. I'm so sorry if I didn't. Y'all might know her as So True, So underscore T-R-E-U on Twitter, because she's always tweeting about anti-blackness and Afro-pessimism and things like that. And she was going on a rant on Facebook, and she kind of ended it with this, and I was like, can I put this on a t-shirt? Because this is something that we've heard and said for years. Mammy don't live here no more. And especially after this whole apocalyptic, you know, election apocalypse, this is something we're all going to be saying now. So, like, don't expect us to sit here and do the work for you after you've all fucked it up for yourselves. I'm not here for it.
Basically, I mean, after the results came in, I was so tired. Everybody's saying, oh, we gotta mobilize, we gotta organize, we gotta get ready and fight through the next 4 years. I'm like,
No,
I'm
no.
tired.
You broke it. You
Just
fix it.
basically. Basically, I have no interest in this. And I mean, we're already fighting just to stay alive.
Yes.
And now you want us to do this when we didn't even fuck this up? No. That's why I feel this so hard. I need to get a t-shirt and a mug. 'Cause I'm bringing that mug to work. I don't give a fuck. All right, let me just put this order in now.
Get a
Girl,
mug.
you got a double XL, girl? Help me out. So, is there anything else you want to say about your campaign? How long is it?
It was 21 days. It's about 18 days now as of this recording. So I think that's until like December 8th. And let me look at it again. So yeah, December 8th. And I keep forgetting to promote it on my social media because I am ignorant and shit. But yeah,
It's
got a
okay,
couple
we
of
got
tees.
you.
Okay, got a couple of tees, a sweatshirt, a mug, and what is that? A sticker? Yeah, and a sticker, in case you just want to, put it on something and carry around with you.
Oh, I could put that on my car. Bitch.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, this good. This good. So please support in this campaign, and we will have a link in the show notes so you can get you some, because you need this. Every
Yes.
black woman needs this.
Yeah.
You ain't nobody's mammy.
No.
So to end the Lauren,
Oh.
I give a big squeeze.
Thank you.
You do the damn thing, girl. All right.
Okay. Well, and some fun news if you in case somehow you missed it, I hope you didn't. Lupita Nyong'o and Regina Hall had an episode of Lip Sync Battle. And if we have to give a shout out, a hat tip to Kay Rage, because she got a bit excited about this and linked us to it. And if you look at it, Lupita does Salt and Pepper's What a Man, Regina Hall does The Weeknd's Earned It, and in Regina's performance, she dressed like The Weeknd, played it for laughs, had a little fun with it. Lupita, on the other hand, sexed it up.
Yeah,
I
she was
mean,
winding them hips. She was rubbing up on them men's.
and dude smacked her on the ass. I was sitting here like, I didn't know Lupita had this in her. I mean,
Yay, I
I'm
love
glad she
it.
do. I'm
Yeah.
glad she do, but I was sitting there like, oh, okay. All right,
All right, I see you now. I see you in a whole new way.
Yeah. I
Ooh.
mean, that was sexy as fuck.
Yeah, she was just like, get into this.
Yep.
I'm fine and I know it. So, that was
Yeah.
fun.
Yeah, it was. So, you can find the performance on YouTube, and from there you can also link to Spike TV's website and watch the whole thing, unless you need to have a cable thing, whatever. I forget what it's called. A cable
Log in or whatever,
yeah, like a cable
credentials.
key, yeah, some type of key or something like that. But hopefully you can see it all if you want to see it all. But definitely check that out, because you, like I said, you ain't gonna be looking at Lupita the same way.
So to Lupita Nyong'o and Regina Hall, we give a squeeze. Now, in casting news, British actress Sophie Okonedo will play Queen Margaret in The Hollow Crown, The War of the Roses, which will air on PBS starting Christmas Day. Oh, a lot of things are coming out Christmas Day. Hidden Figures, Fences at the movie theater, and now this. The Hollow Crown, The War of the Roses, is a lavish three-part follow-up to the BAFTA-winning The Hollow Crown, which aired in 2013. So the first series of The Hollow Crown covered Richard II, which was played by Jeremy Lyons, I believe. Henry IV, which was played by is that the one that Hiddleston played?
I think so.
Or did he play Henry V? Anyway,
I don't know.
one of them was Jeremy Lyons, one of them was Tom Hiddleston, and I forget who the other one was. So now, Sophie will join that number. So this should be interesting, and I'm sure we're going to get lots of backlash on Twitter for a black woman playing such a famous British character. But black folks are British too,
Yeah,
also.
and plus,
And
she
yeah.
looks outstanding in this costuming too.
Yes. And I'm so ready for it. I know she's going to kick so much ass in this role. So to Sophie Okonedo, we give a huge squeeze.
All right. Okay, next bit of news. We also have to give a hat tip to our friend K Rage. A Korean graffiti artist has been painting black girls in hanbok, I hope I said that correctly, which is traditional South Korean dress. This is Chris Chanyang Shim, who goes by Royal Dog underscore on Instagram. And I've actually been seeing these on Tumblr for a while now and sometimes on Facebook. And if you go to his Instagram page, he has been making these really beautiful murals of black women and girls in a traditional South Korean dress all over the place. And I mean, some of them look like, it could be maybe mixed race, or some feel like they could just be monoracial black people, but he has put them, in this context, and some people, of course, are giving it a bit of backlash, but he's portraying these women and girls in these really beautiful ways, and a lot of you can tell with natural hair textures and stuff, and a lot of different skin tones, and it's really, really gorgeous. So if you want to check him out, like I said, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, it just is, they're just lovingly portrayed, it seems, which is not something you find in a lot of art
It's just
that isn't made by black women. So I think that's what is really getting to people and really affecting people, just how lovingly they're portrayed. So,
And
go
it's
ahead.
all very casual, like they belong. It's like, you don't, it doesn't really feel like, he's pointing out, look, I'm doing black women here. Look, look how awesome I am. It's just part of, you look at, the rest of his work, he does everybody, And he didn't, couldn't do this at the expense of like ignoring black women or portraying us in these really horrible stereotypical ways. He puts it within the specific context of, where like they belong here, even if you don't believe they do.
So to Royal Dog, we give a squeak. Our last bit of news is that the Trumpocalypse has gotten black folks writing. A lot of anti-fascist, anti-racist screeds, and one of them is the great Toni Morrison. She wrote "Make America White Again" for the New York for the New Yorker. The choices made by white men who are prepared to abandon their humanity out of fear of black men and women suggest the true horror of lost status. So, Miss Morrison is coming with the fire. The
Oh
fire
my
that
gosh.
only unbridled truth can provide. She's not fucking around with y'all. Definitely check out this essay in the New Yorker. Just read it, learn it, live it. This is the stuff that you need to be aware of for the next however long this person is going to pretend to be in power. Lord Jesus. Anyway.
Also, this is actually part of a larger feature because there were 16 writers who wrote on Trump's America, and in the other version, the headline for it was "Mourning," as in MOURNING, mourning for whiteness. So, you can imagine. Yeah, because Toni Morrison, she don't miss words.
And she's really not here for whiteness.
No.
And that doesn't mean white people. If this is the concept of whiteness
Yeah.
and white supremacy. So she's not here for that.
No.
She's really not even here for writing for white people. She's like, they can overhear if they like, but that's all they'll be doing. I don't make books.
No.
So, to fellow Howard alumna and Nobel Prize winner, well, I'm not a Nobel Prize winner, but she is. Toni Morrison, we have to give the biggest of squeeze.
I ran out of breath. Right.
So now, oh Lord, now we're going to get into just a huge rant. So we won't even need Catch the Fade today because it's been subsumed by our main topic. Which is shows killing off people of color or characters of color for shock value. So this is usually where we talk about how to get away with murder. And we're still going to talk about how to get away with murder. We're just not going to recap all the details. We're going to talk about one particularly painful detail. Which is that in the winter finale of How to Get Away with Murder, one of the main characters of the show is revealed to be the person under the sheet that died in the fire at Annalise's house. And spoiler alert, that person is Wes Gibbons. Played by Alfred Enoch. When you first saw this, what was your reaction, Enda?
My first reaction, I honestly can't even say it was even shock. I was just like, oh, so they made it Wes. Because the way this show goes, I wasn't really surprised. I wasn't all that surprised about it. I kind of was, because next to Annalise Keating, Wes Gibbons was the main character on the show. And so with that, I understood it was supposed to be shock value. But when you get the dynamics of the show, you kind of already know this is what they were going to go for. I was a bit disgusted that they showed the corpse, though.
Really?
Yeah. Because I'm like, I didn't need to see that.
Girl. We're going to talk about that, too.
Okay.
Because there are too many fucking parallels to this and another show.
Yeah.
That has lost my faith and disappointed the fuck out of me. But go ahead. Did you have any other reactions? You were not shocked. You were disgusted.
I was also disappointed. I mean, I didn't want it to be Nate, because, I mean, obviously. Mm. But I'm like, it could have literally been anybody else that, because even though we called Wes annoying and whatever and all of that, I still liked Wes, and I liked watching his character develop.
And he made the plot go.
Yeah.
Him and Annalise, they made the plot go.
Yeah.
And he was one of the most, out of a slew, out of a cast where most of the characters are undeveloped to mildly developed, he was one of the most developed characters on the show besides Viola's Annalise Keating.
Yeah. And they had some really good back and forth moments together, you know? They worked well together. You know,
there was such a chemistry that you were shipping them.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved the tension between them. You know, because even if, you know, they were playing nice with each other and stuff, I'm still sitting there like, oh, man, are they playing each other? Or are they, you know, really, you know, having, you know, or are they just having this good moment, you know, together there? Or like, they were a good on-screen couple.
Yeah, that was one of the sources of the tension.
Yeah. You know?
Annalise had so much knowledge, about him and his family that she was holding back from him. Mm-hmm. And he kind of sensed that and didn't trust her because of it. Also yeah. because she lied to him a lot.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was just such a interesting dynamic, and with all kinds of tension, sexual tension,
yeah.
just straight ahead, basic tension. And
yeah,
just, there was a lot going on with that relationship, and to sever it like this for reasons that really can't be explained simply.
Yeah.
That, or for reasons I can't fathom, is just, it sucks.
Yeah. Because I mean, wow, just everything between them. I mean, from that moment, like, she tells him to shoot her in the leg, he won't do it. We killed Rebecca. Rebecca's dead, whatever. You know, she's gone. I did that. Now shoot me in the leg. And he tries to shoot her in the heart. I'm like, whoa. I mean, he literally tried to kill her. And then, even after all of that, they're still trying to make something between them work.
I just, why would you mess up? This is one of the best parts of the show.
Yeah.
They're dynamic. Trying to figure out what the fuck is going on between them. And trying to see if they could ever get to a place where they could trust each other.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm getting angrier as we talk. So yeah, I got spoiled before I could ever watch the episode.
Oh, really?
I got spoiled. No, but it's just because Black Twitter was mad as fuck.
Oh, Black
Tumblr. So they had to talk about it.
Black Tumblr was pissed off too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. And, you know, 'cause a lot of people weren't expecting, show produced by Shonda Rhimes, not written, but produced by Shonda Rhimes, to let them down like this. Not this show.
Yeah.
I mean, Scandal is another matter. Grey's Anatomy is another matter. This show with Viola at the helm, you weren't.
Yeah.
I wasn't really thinking it would go out like this, but you have to remember, Shonda doesn't write this show.
Yeah.
Viola doesn't write this show. Pete Nowak writes this show.
But, and I think also with him, especially with him being a white, well, not white, but a gay dude, I think people gave him an amount of trust and amount of, okay, we'll give you this chance, because there were moments in this show where they got a lot of the dynamics absolutely correct, and he was listening to the cast,
the actors.
Yeah, he was listening to the actors, because that whole thing with Agent Naomi King, and she said she had to go and tell him, if I hit this woman, Lynn Whitfield, because that scene where she tries to slap Lynn Whitfield, said, if I hit her, she will kill me. There is nothing else that's going to happen out of that. So I cannot hit this woman, and then it'll blow over. And they worked it out. Little things like that, I believe, is why we all gave Pete Nowak a chance.
Yeah, because that was stuff like that.
Yeah.
Was it happening in other shows that let us down, like Orange is the New Black?
Yeah.
Like the writers weren't listening to Laverne Cox when she had valid concerns about the black women characters and how they were portrayed on that show.
Oh. Really? That's also disappointing to know that too, because knowing that they would actually find her twin brother, would cast her twin brother to play her, you know, to play her character, you know, before
transition.
Before transition, I'm like, that was a huge thing. But so when you have those other failures, it's just it's such a letdown.
Mm-hmm. And it just reinforces, you know, you think you try to trust. You know, even against your better judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get disappointed like that, and it just makes you not want to trust again.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's make-believe and stuff like that, but, you know, we get emotionally drawn in. They want to draw you in emotionally to these characters. So when you kill them off in this unceremonious way, you know, we're going to have feelings about it. And when, especially in a TV culture that disproportionately kills off characters from marginalized groups, people of color, LGBTQ people, people from non-Christian religions, you name it. Those are the people that just get written off in the most horrific ways.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to remember something, is that the people who create these things, they don't do it in a vacuum, okay? Everything is, you know, comes, you know, from somewhere that you've either experienced it, you've learned about it, or, you know, you're informed in some type of way when you create this thing. If I can kind of use myself as an example, because I gave Julia or K. Rage something of mine to read, you know, and she was giving me feedback on it. And the thing that she, you know, said to me, please don't kill the lesbians, you know. And I'm like, it's really kind of horrifying that she would even have to ask that. But then when you look at it and I found out because I don't watch Orange is the New Black, but then when I found out, you know, what happened and just the reactions that I saw from it, you know, on my social media, just everybody just felt so deflated and so let down. They killed, you know, like the one, you know, black lesbian who's playing a black lesbian character on a prominent show. And just to see that disappointment and just that hurt that like, went with that, man, I mean.
And they did it for the reason what killing her did not do. It did not have whatever effect they thought it might have on the story.
Yeah, was it for like white pain or like a teaching moment, quote unquote, for white people?
Yeah, it was white people trying to teach about Black Lives Matter and all this kind of stuff, and police violence against black people and. And their cast, their writer's room is the whitest of Lily White. So, I mean, most writer's rooms are pretty much white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, off the top of my head, I can only think of a few that aren't. I mean, How to Get Away with Murder is not a completely Lily White writer's room. I mean, some of the scenes that have been written in that show cannot have been written by Pete Nowak. He just could not. He doesn't have the range or the experience to write some of those scenes.
No.
Not that bathroom scene.
No.
Not that
not the taking off the wig.
Viola. Mm-hmm.
Not taking off the wig and taking off the makeup. No.
No. Not
the beauty salon.
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Not the constant shading of white people.
No.
Pete didn't write that.
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, Queen Sugar.
Yeah, Queen Sugar. Luke
Atlanta
Cage.
Doesn't have.
Yeah.
In fact, they have an all black writer's room.
Yeah.
Which the creator made a point at that.
Luke Cage.
Yes.
That's a black.
And that's what made it great. That's what made the casting choices and the writer's room is what made that show great and what made it break Netflix.
Yeah.
And what made it the highest rated, most popular Netflix series of Marvel Netflix series of all time.
Yep.
So that plays a part in it. I don't think in most of the shows you don't see them killing people off this way in this insensitive kind of way.
Yeah.
I mean, people got killed off in Luke Cage.
Yeah.
But there was a reason.
Yeah.
There were several reasons. It moved the plot forward. So now I got to talk about The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, last episode, I was saying that How to Get Away with Murder was kind of giving me too many really bad Walking Dead feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're focusing so much on who's dead, who's dead, who's dead. Mm. Instead of, you know, moving forward with the characters. You know, I want to see more about these characters. I don't want to be focused on who's dead. Because in a year filled with so many deaths of people that I love and admire,
mm-hmm.
I don't tune in to death. That's not what gets me to watch a show. It's not what I want to be debating about all mm-hmm. the time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, on a show like The Walking Dead set in the zombie apocalypse, it's going to be a topic of conversation, but even there, what got me interested in the show was the characters.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, the characters of color, like
yeah.
Glenn Rhee, played by the wonderful and handsome Steven Yeun. Michonne, played by the wonderful and gorgeous and supremely talented Danai Gurira. Sasha, played by the just the lovely Sonequa Martin-Green. I mean, people like that.
Yeah.
And there's been a slew of black male characters on The Walking Dead that have come and gone and died in horrific fashions for no reason other than torture porn.
Yeah.
Like, look how bad this guy is dying. Look at all these zombies eating this black man up. Yeah. So they have a bad history, and they just added on to it by killing lesbians and then killing the only Asian man in the cast.
Yeah, I'm like, Glenn was pretty much one of the reasons I kind of stayed with the show anyway. Because if it hadn't been for him, Rick would have died. First episode. Rick would have been dead.
Maybe he should have died.
Yeah, Glenn saves his ass.
And it doesn't hurt that he's fine.
Yeah, true. True.
And he's a really good actor. And,
yeah, but
and people say, people want to justify it by saying, you know, this is what happened in the comics. I don't give a fuck. There are so many details that happened in the comics that did not translate to the show.
Yeah, because I'm like, from what I know, a whole lot of the show has deviated from the comics by now.
I mean, one of the characters that's become a fan favorite from, for some reason I don't understand, is not even a comic book character. So miss me with that. It was in the comics. It had to happen. Daryl Dixon was not in the comics. He should not be alive. And especially since his reckless actions led to Glenn being killed. After someone else had already made the sacrifice that this new villain wanted. The new villain said he was going to kill one person out of the group because that group killed a whole bunch of his men. And women. His group. And they did that. And they killed a character that meant a lot to Sasha. And Rosita. And then you thought that was going to be it. You thought, okay, Glenn was safe. Then Daryl hops up. Hops his happy ass up. When the new villain says, look, I don't want anybody jumping up and saying anything. You know, I will shut it down if that happens. And he jumps his happy ass up for no real good reason. And this new villain takes it out on Glenn. And they show us every disgusting detail of this beautiful man being bashed in the head with a barbed wire baseball bat. They show his eye popping out of his socket. They show the bloody remains of his head being bashed in. They do that to a beloved character. All because some white man wanted to jump bad. And that is one of the things that made me terribly angry and bitter to this day that, you know, they had this beautiful man, this beautiful character, who still had so much storyline that they hadn't yet written for him. They had him die at the expense of a white man that hasn't had a solid storyline in about 2 seasons. Who wasn't in the comics, who doesn't really have a reason for being there, except he's inexplicably the fan favorite. The fan favorite of white people, anyway.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so after that happened, I was like, fuck this show.
Yeah.
I love the black women that are on the show, but I'll just catch up on Tumblr. Because I can't give them any more of my time or ratings.
Yeah. I actually stopped watching in season 4.
Yeah. Well, you got out.
Okay.
You got out. Had a good time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they didn't get, they just, and what makes it worse is that, you know, I've seen on Tumblr, I've read on Tumblr that in like the 3rd or 4th episode, they basically give all this backstory to a tertiary character that hasn't been on the show for 6 seasons like Glenn has. Glenn still hadn't had any backstory.
Yeah, all we know about Glenn is he was like the pizza guy.
Yeah, we didn't know anything about his past before the zombie apocalypse. And they managed to flesh that out for most of the other characters, especially the white characters. But to give this tertiary white male character all this backstory, to devote basically an episode to him, when you hadn't done that for Glenn in 6 years, I was done. I mean, fuck this show forever. So basically, these shows kill characters like Glenn and Wes and Poussey because they know fans love them and it will hurt. They don't do it for plot reasons or story reasons. It's just, how will this, you know, what will hurt the most? What will cause the most outrage on social media? What will boost my ratings for an episode? An episode. And I'm sick of it. It's like they never learn. All the controversy after the 100 killed off a bunch of black and also queer characters. And they don't learn. They keep doing it. I'm sick of it. I'm sick to death of it. I'm about to just give up on these mainstream network shows and just focus on shows written and directed by people of color, particularly women of color, because it seems like we get more nuanced stories and less needless death on them. There's still death. It's a part of it's a part of most stories, but it doesn't have to be a part of all of them. And there's still a lot of stories you can tell without using these kind of stunt deaths.
Yeah.
You know? And Queen Sugar does that for me. They give me story. They give me character. They give me nuance. And they give me black people.
Yeah.
Beautiful black people, too. And so, yeah.
Look,
why deal with The Walking Dead when I have Queen Sugar?
Yeah. Something like
that. But I have Underground.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, the deaths in Underground, there are... I will say a couple of the deaths in Underground were unnecessarily grisly because, you know, I didn't need to see that.
Yeah, I didn't need to see that with Sam. But
yeah, no one needed to see that. That was just traumatic and horrifying. I mean, why would you show that? That was terrible. But I mean, at least, you know, it's like it's part of the plot, you know, because like with Sam's death, that's what finally makes... Ernestine. That's what finally makes Ernestine take action. Like she kind of, I'm not saying she snapped, but that was the last straw for her.
Yeah. She was done being docile and,
yeah,
and quietly resistant.
Yeah.
She was full on.
Yeah.
But I think as terrible as it was, the way they depicted Sam's death was proving a point about the inhumanity of white slaveholders.
Yeah.
But we already knew that, but that just took it over the top.
Yeah.
And it showed exactly how much they thought of us.
Yeah.
That they used our dead bodies as ways to rally their base.
Yeah.
Which is shit. It's almost prescient for today.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, it was terrible. But it wasn't altogether unnecessary. But I see your point. I see your point.
Yeah.
We didn't need to see that. We didn't need to see that. But
no.
maybe some white people in the audience needed to see that.
Yeah. But I'm like, if they didn't already think that was horrifying, I mean, they ain't shit I can do for them.
Yeah.
You don't already think, you know.
Yeah. Mammy don't live here no more.
No. No.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this is a very disturbing trend, and I don't see it ending anytime soon because these showrunners and show writers don't seem to give a fuck about our outrage.
Yeah. There is one example I can give to the contrary of that. Do you watch Underground? I mean, not Underground, but, oh, shit, Outsiders. WGN. Oh, well, you may have seen the Sassel gift sets and stuff like that online. Apparently... The script, spoiler. Apparently, the script called for Hassel's family member, Big Foster. He was going to kill Sally Ann early in the season, but it didn't happen because everybody loved that ship. And Sassel is the reason why a whole lot of us are actually watching that show. And so she's not only, you know, alive on it, she's actually a huge part of the storyline now. And so that is the one time I can say people listen to the fans and, you know, something good came out of it. We didn't get, you know, this, you know, Black Death for Man pain.
So, oh, God. I'm sick of this shit. Of this shit. It's bad enough on TV. It's bad enough in real life and on TV.
Yeah.
That they think we live for them, but now we gotta die for them too? I mean, there's so many terrible messages that people pick up from TV and then try to translate that into real life experiences with people of color, with other marginalized groups, and then we have to waste energy clapping back on them.
Yep.
are trying to ignore their aggressions. I'm sick of this. It's got to stop. And the only way to stop it is to stop. It's one, we got to have more inclusive writers' rooms. And two, we've got to stop giving our ratings to shows that disrespect us.
Mm-hmm.
And three, we got to start killing more white people.
Yeah. And also, I kind of hate to put it this way, stop making the people of color just attached to these white characters. Because this is that's a huge problem I have with Sense 8. Numi and, how do you pronounce her name?
Amanita.
Amanita. That's the one thing. See, this is the thing. I know why Numi loves Amanita. Amanita fights for her. Amanita goes and puts herself in harm's way to go and save Numi. Amanita, you know, does all of these things and, you know, keeps Numi safe. Okay, so why does Amanita love
Numi? But what does Numi do for Amanita?
Exactly, exactly. That was what I could not stand. So I didn't even...
You don't even know Amanita's last name.
I don't know anything about Amanita.
Thank you. Man, I can't.
And
I don't know if I'll be watching season two. Because
yeah,
of what
I stopped watching, and I stopped watching it like halfway through.
And the way Jamie Clayton talked about the departure of the Afro-British actor. I'm done with that show. Good luck to Freema. I love her.
Yeah, me too.
I love her so much. You don't understand.
Yeah.
I love her very much, but, you know.
I need somebody to give her a better role.
Yeah.
Something
she needs her own show.
Yeah, because she's just so disrespected in all of these roles she plays.
I'm saying! She was disrespected on Doctor Who.
Yeah.
She's disrespected on this. The only place she got, well... She was somewhat respected on Law and Order UK, but then they raped her character.
Oh my god! Oh,
yeah. They retold the storyline from the original Law and Order on the US that went to the medical examiner, I believe. They got assaulted, but Freema played a lawyer. Mm-hmm. She played the assistant DA, mm-hmm. or whatever they call it in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave that storyline to her. And, I mean, she knocked it out of the park. She's a good actor, mm-hmm. but, it was a thing. Anyway,
Wow.
Give Freema Agyeman her own show. Thank
yeah.
you. I'm sick of this shit. I'm so bone deep weary of this shit. And they really need to start killing off these useless white characters. I don't know why they let them thrive. When there's nothing... Daryl has been sitting on that show like a lump on a log, not doing shit. Not even showering. God, he looks so stank.
Well, to be fair, Norman Reedus just kind of looks like that anyway.
Exactly. They just let him be Norman Reedus on this show, collecting a check, not doing anything. They don't write for him, and he doesn't seem to be doing much acting. And why is he still there? What are people projecting on this character to make him a fan favorite? I don't know. But they need to start killing off their white fan favorites that are useless to the plot. And that means Frank Delfino, too. Sorry, Inda. But characters like him gotta go. You there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
I'm just, yeah. They gotta start killing them off. I don't care how much, you know. Let these white fans riot. Let them get a taste of what we've been dealing with for decades. Fuck them. White people always placating the racists. I'm sick of that shit, too.
Yeah. I kill white people in my work.
Hey, another reason to endorse Enda Lauren. Check her out. Come to repress.com. Check a search for Enda Lauren on Amazon. Get her book, Compromised. Oh, she do be killing white people in that, too. Yeah, get that book, Compromised. Check out the Raven Moody Chronicles. But yeah, I'm sick of this. I'm so sick. Okay. Do you have anything else to say? Or should we move on with the show? What?
I think I'm done. I think you said it. You said it all. You know, just stop killing people of color for shock value. Just stop.
It's tired. It's weak. It's pathetic. And it's making me quit shows that I'd rather not quit.
Yeah.
Oh, God. We could talk about this all day, but yeah. Let's move on with the show. Well, this week, Queens, is going to be different. It might be a little sadder than our regular, but we have to say rest in power to Gwen Ifill. And rest in power to Sharon Jones.
Yeah.
Gwen Ifill was a voice of reason in today's journalism. A voice of reason in a media that cares only about ratings and clicks and doesn't care what they say to get them. She was like this oasis of reason among all, you know, an island of bullshit or something. And she's gone. Sharon Jones was just a firecracker. She was just like, when I think of vitality and just energy and joy.
Yeah.
I think Sharon Jones loved what she was doing. And she might have only gotten recognition late in life, but she probably would have kept on doing it regardless, because, you know, once she finally found her calling, she just went for it with gusto, and she was just,
She didn't release her first single until she was 40, and she had to put up with a lot to get to where she was. Because if you ever listen to her, she'll tell you that the rejection she heard saying she was too old, too dark, too fat, and too short. And she even wrote that in songs now. But this woman created her own label, Daptone, and the Dap Kings were her house band. And a certain someone did try to steal that band away, even though, she did work with them, but that was Sharon Jones's band, and she deserves all the recognition for just her perseverance, for her energy. This woman was an unreal performer. If there was anybody who was an heir to Tina Turner, I'm first give that to Sharon Jones. And it was heartbreaking when she was first diagnosed with cancer. But even after that, she kept going.
And she fought hard.
She did.
Fought that bastard hard.
She did. And I mean, finally she got that documentary a couple of months ago. I haven't seen it yet, but it's Miss Sharon Jones. And that woman, this is really just such a loss. This is a huge loss. I mean, yeah.
This year sucks hard. And
this year sucks. Cancer
especially,
sucks.
Yeah, especially for Black people.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I was talking to somebody today about Black people's relationships with Black celebrities.
Yeah.
I think it's different than, you know, relationships that mainstream fans have with mainstream celebrities or whatever. That's my code word for white people.
Yeah.
I think we understand how hard Black celebrities work to get to wherever they are, to make a name for themselves. And they mean so much more to us,
yeah,
because of that, and because they're this beacon of representation in the sea of whiteness, you know?
Yeah.
And we look to them to, you know, for affirmation.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just a real deep, complicated kind of relationship that we have with people that we don't even know.
I know. They still have family, though.
Exactly. So when people like Sharon and Prince pass, it hurts.
It really does.
And we need time to grieve.
Yeah.
But this year has not allowed it.
No.
Because we're grieving one person, and then we hear an announcement that another person has passed.
Yeah, because, I mean, what, Gwen Ifill and Sharon Jones are just a few days apart.
Yeah. Gwen passed on my birthday. God damn.
Oh, wow. And this was barely a week. It was barely a week.
So, yeah. Lord, just all the peace and blessings to their families.
Yeah.
And we will always love you, Sharon Jones.
Yes.
We will always love you, Gwen Ifill. We will miss y'all like hell.
Yeah.
And another person we're going to miss is our First Lady, Michelle Obama. No, she's not passing. She's not going home. Well, she's probably going back to Chicago.
But unfortunately,
in the White House.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem right to see somebody else come in there after her. It just doesn't seem right.